This is Animal Weapon, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Patrick Cortez dreamt up his one-man electronic act Animal Weapon in 2011 and has been a staple in the Raleigh music scene ever since. His talent for musical expression led him to win a 2017 Webby Award for his work on the hit podcast Undisclosed. And over the years, he's released several EPs and albums, including Good Luck Tyrannosaurus and his latest Set of Constraints, which tackles themes surrounding mental health and anxiety.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Super busy, but...
Tell us about the new album, Set of Constraints.
It's a different record. It's a lot different than anything I've done up until now. It kind of came about by accident. It was supposed to be an EP at first, but it just kind of, you know, got away from me and turned into an album. And I've never had that happen before. So,
and how is it different than your last album?
It's a lot more subdued. It's a little bit less all over the place, I think, than something like, you know, my last record was. Or this one doesn't really have any, I hate using this word, but bangers, so to speak. There's barely anything that sounds like it could even really fit on the radio that well, you know, besides like college radio, I guess. But yeah, there's really only a couple songs that have like catchy hooks. And I'm realizing right now, as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm not doing a great job selling this record, but I think it's for the best. Cause I got to just kind of just did whatever for this one. And I didn't have as rigid of a roadmap as I did for like my last album.
And tell us about the lead single Deserve and the music video that's out already.
So that one kind of came together really quickly. You know, a few months before that, I had just kind of had a lot going on where I realized like, okay, I've got to start taking better care of myself and stop beating myself up all the time. And so, you know, started going to therapy and stuff. And I feel like on first listen, it sounds almost depressing, but it's like, pay attention to the lyrics. It's really kind of the opposite of that, because it's just about like not, it's about just realizing that like, hey, you don't deserve to, you know, beat yourself up all the time, and you deserve to be happy. I started and finished that song and the video all in 3.5-4 weeks. It went very, very, very quickly. We didn't even have the final mix done when we started shooting the video, but we had enough to be like, okay, this is, because it's more of, it's, I hesitate to even call it a video. It's a lot more of like a mood piece, kind of. That sounds super pretentious, but I just feel like it, that's a better descriptor for it, I think. And for the video, we just kind of, I knew I wanted to shoot some of it in Auntie Betty's, which is the bar that's in the first little bit of it. And then I kind of wanted the rest of it to just be kind of solo wandering around Raleigh. And so we managed to hit a couple spots, kind of just give them like a little nod.
And how does music play a role in your mental health journey, dealing with anxiety?
I mean, it's a good outlet for it, for sure. I feel when I really get into it and I'm really working on something, it's really hard for me to think about anything else, like while I'm actually doing the work. It can be hard to get in the right headspace to actually sit down and do the work. But once I do, I feel like a little calmer. And that's not to say that it's always easy and that like working on that stuff doesn't also cause a fair bit of anxiety, you know. I think it helps, at least at the time, you know. And then, you know, especially once you get on a good streak and you're like, oh, I think I might have something here, you know, I might have a new song, or like I really like, or even if I just find a new sound, and you know, from playing around with like synth patches and stuff, that feeling of being productive can help a lot.
What are you inspired by, and what does your creative process look like? Like, are you inspired by something and then you start at it, or do you just kind of sit there? And
I kind of just go, you know. I don't usually have like a muse. It's very rare that there is one. I mean, there's a couple instances, and then when it is, it kind of tends to be more personal, you know. A lot of it just comes from experimenting, you know. And I'll have sometimes loose goals here and there. There's one track on this album called DST that I made for kind of a twofold thing. One, like my favorite day of the year is when the time changes forward in the spring. It just feels like kind of a weight lifted off. And like, I love, you know, that first day where the time has changed, that, you know, I love like going outside at, you know, 7:15 and being like, it's still sunny outside. So I wanted to write something that just for me, that I could listen to on Spring Forward Day this year. And I did exactly that. And, but I also wanted it to double as kind of a lullaby for my niece. She just turned one. And I just wanted to make something for her. Not, I didn't even really hide it. I tend to hide samples and stuff in a lot of my work, but this one I didn't even hide. I had a little sample of her laugh in there, her giggle. So
it's cute. And how did you first get into music?
I want to say I was like 12, 13, and, you know, I was big into Nirvana, and that's what kind of made me pick up a guitar. I probably mostly did it because I thought it would be cool, you know, certainly not for the right reasons at first. And then I got really into it and, you know, started actually performing in front of people when I was like 19 and just doing like really crappy acoustic, like singer-songwriter, very exceptionally mediocre coffee house gigs. And then for a little bit after that, I started trying to get a band or two going, and it just wasn't really going anywhere because it was hard to coordinate between like, you know, four or five dudes that were, you know, all in our early 20s. So eventually at a certain point, I just started playing around with electronic stuff in Logic. And I was like, I'm going to do this now because this is more fun anyway, and I'm better at it. And it feels like I have a lot more room to be creative, and I don't have to rely on anybody else, you know. There's your origin story.
And where did the name come from?
Right around that time. And keep in mind, not to sound like that, but keep in mind, this was like 6 years before the movie. But I was reading a Deadpool comic, and at the beginning of it, he was injecting hamsters with rabies and then stuffing them into the barrel of a shotgun. And then he like fired it at a bill collector. So a literal weapon that shoots animals out of it.
And who are your musical inspirations?
I mean, I feel like I wear a lot of my influences on my sleeve. So like Nine Inch Nails is a big one. And I've that's another thing with this record is I have graduated, I think, as far as I can so far from, you know, referencing my influences and stuff. But Nine Inch Nails is one. Some of the like kind of LA beat music scene has always been, so, you know, like stuff like Flying Lotus or Baths, lots of stuff that's on Ghostly International. I've always been like obsessed with that label. And Ninja Tune is another good label that's just, they just have endless amounts of really good, but kind of less mainstream music. And then also, you know, just some poppy stuff like Fanagram. And honestly, this record, I even found myself, I never thought I'd say this like out loud, but this record, I even kind of found myself being inspired by like a Taylor Swift, you know. It was all over the place. Influences are all over the place. Never thought I'd say Nine Inch Nails and Taylor Swift were both influences on a record, but there you go.
And who has been like your favorite artist to collaborate with?
That's really, really tough. And I don't know that I have a great answer for that because everybody is so different. I think the slight edge would have to go to my friend Alex, who goes by Neo Obsidian. And we did a split EP together a few years ago, right at the beginning of the pandemic. And we're really close friends. We go back 10 or 12 years, longer, probably more like almost 14, 15. But he, you know, we have a lot of similar tastes. We met because of Nine Inch Nails. I don't know. We kind of have similar ideas that we bounce off of each other. And he's done some remixes of some of my songs. He's always sending me stuff that he's working on. And I'm always trying to kind of light a fire under him because he hasn't released any of the other stuff yet, but it's coming. And I can't wait. I can't wait just as a fan of his. So I think he is probably edges out the other ones just by a hair. Working with MJ Burns on this record, though, was right up there. I mean, she was just, that was a whole different thing because, you know, when me and Alex work together, it's aside from like one time we were recording vocals for him, it's always been remote. And with MJ, you know, I got to have her right here in my apartment recording. It was a lot of fun. You know, we got a little drunk and just got to a point where we kept messing up takes and having to start over because we'd both be laughing and the mic would pick up one of us laughing. We just like ruin takes. So yeah, that was another one.
And then who would be like your dream collaboration?
I think about this a lot and it's like probably like Fantagram, I think. But like I think about this all the time. I'm like, I don't know that I would want to collaborate with any of my, you know, anybody that I look up to as a musician, because like I would be like, you know, I would be like, they're gonna hate every idea that I have, like, you know, and not so much a never meet your heroes kind of thing, so much as a don't disappoint your heroes kind of thing. So I don't know, if I had to, probably like Fantagram I think would be a really fun session.
And what's the music scene like in Raleigh?
It's all over the place. We've got some good. Our biggest thing is just kind of a generalized umbrella of indie rock. We've got some really good indie rock bands, and there's kind of a revolving door. They're not all active anymore, but they've, you know, we've turned out some really good ones. Goodbye Titan is a band that I, you know, they haven't done anything in a while, but they were for a little bit like the biggest band here, and I'm friends with some of those guys, and they were always super cool. Indie rock's a big part of it. There is a pretty healthy scene for, you know, just kind of DJ culture. So lots of, you know, there's a lot of electronic nights at pretty healthy amount of clubs too. So like lots of, you know, lots of like EDM, dubstep, house, trance, drum and bass. There's a lot of that around here too. And then we've got some pretty good local rappers as well. One of them, Casey Battle, I worked with him on a remix for one of my songs, and he's going to be opening up the release show tomorrow night.
And what have been some of your favorite festivals to play at?
So I've really only done two so far, and one of them was really just the day party. So our big one here is Hopscotch, and you know, I'm always happy to do it any year that, you know, somebody wants me. I obviously the last couple years of, I mean, 2020, you know, wasn't a thing. 2021, everything was a little bit shaky. So, you know, I'm always happy to do that. And then I just the other week did a show for Bull City Summit, which is Durham kind of trying to get almost kind of a South by Southwest thing off the ground. So like festivals with different shows at different venues on different nights, panels, like tech conferences. So, you know, music, art, film, technology. And this was the first year, and somebody let me headline, which I thought was really cool. So that was fun.
Awesome. And what's like your set like?
It's usually, I try to make it a ride, you know. I like to have either a good buildup at the very beginning, or sometimes just jump in to the louder stuff closer to the beginning. And I take it down a little bit, and then more mellow stuff, and then sometimes I'll take it to more the intimate, more kind of emotional stuff, and then I always try to finish with a bang too, but it depends. And I try really, really hard to keep them really different every time, you know. Certainly not any two shows in a row. I'm never going to play the same set list unless I wind up, you know, touring or something. Then you know, it'd be a little bit more acceptable to just do the same thing every night. But I like to, when I'm playing, you know, just for here, because I know a lot of the same people are going to keep coming, I want to switch it up.
And you won a Webby Award for the Undisclosed
podcast.
Yeah. Tell us a little about that and what that was like.
That was wild. Yeah. I mean, I had been doing music for the podcast since I started doing it in 2015. And I was just like I just got in touch with Rabia Chaudhry over Twitter. And like the next day, she had me in touch with like the producer for the show. And then, you know, the Webby thing comes around and the Undisclosed team was like, hey, we want to put you up for a Webby. Are you cool with that? I was like, yeah, of course I'm cool with that. And I didn't really expect to win, but it was cool. And then I wound up going to the ceremony by myself in New York. It was wild. And I, like, you know, I'm there by myself. And, you know, I didn't know anybody there. I made a couple friends at like a cocktail hour. And I actually ran into a guy who played in this band, Key Theory, who I've played with several times here while they were on tour. He's like, "You're Animal Weapon. I'm from Key Theory." I was like, I knew it. But other than that, I was like all by myself. And it's just wild because I'm sitting at a table with like, you know, a couple of YouTube personalities that I recognize. And then Van Jones is like two tables over. And I was like, this is weird seeing him not on my TV. And you know, Solange is a few tables over from Matt. And I'm like, you know, and Joel McHale is hosting. And this was before we knew like what a scumbag Louis C.K. was. But like at the time, he was one of my favorite comedians and he was there. And I was like, I had just the worst imposter syndrome. I was like, I think they invited me by mistake. But there was an open bar, so I just, you know, kept going back to that.
So what was it like when they called your name?
So for the ceremony, you don't actually go up there. They had a thing the day before that where they shoot. They only had a very few amount of people actually go up on stage and receive awards, and the rest of those, everybody else, they shoot your little acceptance speech, which is you get five words, and they shoot that the day before. They give you a prop Webby and you go shoot your thing, and then there's like just a little cocktail hour where you get to just kind of network and meet new people. But even doing that, I was super nervous because this was in May and the cocktail hour was in Brooklyn, and I am, you know, wearing a t-shirt with like a blazer over it, and, you know, it's really hot. And I'm like, why did I do this when I'm about to be like on camera? Like, I'm going to be like wild sweaty. I got there and they were like, yeah, whenever you're ready to shoot your thing. And I was like, you guys can shoot a few more before me. And I just like went in the bathroom and like took my shirt off. I was like, I've got to cool down right now. And I was still very like, I don't know, very nervous. They give you a couple takes, you know. I don't know if you've seen what the Webby Award looks like, but it's like just this like coily spring. And they were like, play with the spring a little bit. It was weird. It was very weird, but it was super cool. It's just this kind of like out of body experience.
What were your five words?
Bring a non-Syed home, thanks.
And did you know you won when you went up, before you went up to New York?
Yeah, they tell you. They tell you a couple weeks before that. So I really only had like 2 weeks because they announce it online. And I actually, my friends found out before I did because I was on vacation in New Orleans when they announced it. And, you know, I'd been out the night before, so I was sleeping in, and I had forgotten. When I first woke up, I wasn't really thinking about the Webby by the time I went to bed. And I woke up and my phone was just text after text after. They were like, yo, you won. I was like, oh my God. And like my mom knew before I did. And yeah, it was wild.
Awesome. So what's next for you?
I've got another, there's like two projects I've got in the works that I'm not ready to talk about yet. I like to keep a little air of mystery around that. There's those two things that are not necessarily Animal Weapon. I also really want to do a lot of like, I want to start doing some more instrumental stuff that could at least like go up for, you know, some kind of other media like film or video games, you know, and just see how that goes. I'd really like to specifically score something, you know, even if it's just a short film, you know. So there's that. And then I don't know, I've kind of already got some more ideas for new Animal Weapon, but I feel like I need to like chill for a little bit because, you know, this is always a lot, you know. Finishing this stuff has always been a lot. And I mean, you know, it's not, in a way, I've kind of already had my break because the record's been, I mean, this record has been done for like like 7 or 8 months, which was great that this time it was just pretty smooth sailing and not like everything getting done at the last minute. But, you know, there's still a lot to do after that, you know, like, and I mean, interviews, I don't know, probably need a little bit of a break before I start going back to the Animal Weapon stuff.
Congrats on everything.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.